On December 12, 1937, Japan sank a U.S. naval ship called the USS Panay. The attack was caught on film, and 70 years later, those pictures and the last survivor have kept the story alive. NPR's Ted Robbins reports.
In the 1930s, the U.S. had something unthinkable today, a treaty with China allowing American gunboats to travel deep up the Yangtze River. It was a major trade route for U.S. commerce in China and notorious for pirate attacks.
So one of the major missions of these American ships was to keep the river free of bandits and to protect, in particular, these Standard Oil tankers that were plying the river.
Nick Spark is a filmmaker and writer. He says by 1937, the Yangtze faced a much bigger threat than pirates. The Japanese army had launched an invasion of China, and by December it was fighting for the city of Nanking, a fight that became known as the Rape of Nanking. The brutality was recorded on newsreels.
The invaders scaled the walls at night, planting machine guns and light artillery that raked the town by day. Horror piles upon horror, and one pitiful scene surpasses another.
The USS Panay, with 55 men aboard, was sent to rescue any Americans left, including embassy staff and journalists, most notably a newsreel photographer who recorded what was to come. The Panay, with its civilians aboard, escorted the oil tankers 20 miles upstream to wait out the battle for Nanking. They anchored in the middle of the river and waited. Then, on December 12th...
A quiet Sunday afternoon, shortly after lunch, officers of the Panay and several of the refugees are chatting in the wardroom when suddenly planes appear. The ship has been bombed by Japanese Navy planes.
The last survivor of the attack remembers it vividly.
I was sleeping in the bunk. I was sleeping, taking a nap in the afternoon, 1 o'clock.
94-year-old Fawn Huffman worked below decks on the boiler.
Next thing I remember, they was evacuating the ship, and I went in the river.
The newsreel shows the Japanese planes attacking and the crew on deck firing back with machine guns, one sailor still in his underwear.
The camera portrays heroism, sights but not sounds. There was no sound equipment aboard the Panay, only silent cameras.
The ship's captain was wounded badly enough to be taken below. Commander Tex Anders took charge. His son, Bill Anders, was 4 years old at the time, safe with his mother in Canton, China. Bill Anders grew up to become an astronaut. He flew aboard Apollo 8, the first manned mission to orbit the moon. He recalls how his father wrote the gruesome order to abandon ship.
Since he'd been wounded in the throat, he couldn't talk, so he had to write initially in blood and then in pencil his orders.
Several small boats from the Panay carried the crew to the riverbank. Three men aboard died. 27 were injured. The survivors watched their ship sink.
And finally the Panay rolls over on her side and goes down in 10 fathoms. Goes down with her colors still flying, hanging in shreds from her gaff. It's an event that has shocked the world.
It was especially shocking because people could see pictures of the incident and because the U.S. was a neutral country. So for years, people wondered if the attack was a mistake. Maybe the Japanese thought the Panay was a Chinese boat. Both Fawn Huffman and Nick Spark say that's not likely.
They had American flags all over the ship, all over the top of the ship.
And you can see it if you look at photographs or the newsreel. Is they painted American flags on the top of the ship, on the decks, so that any aircraft flying overhead should be able to see these flags and understand that this is an American vessel.
So why did the Japanese attack? Writer Nick Spark believes the chaos in Nanking created an opportunity for renegade factions within the Japanese military.
Who really wished that the United States and Japan would get it over with and get into an active conflict so that the Japanese could once and for all drive the United States out of China.
The Roosevelt administration lodged a protest, and instead of resistance, the American embassy in Japan got cards and letters from embarrassed Japanese citizens. Roosevelt got a response that, for the time, was nothing short of extraordinary.
Yes, actually, the Emperor of Japan eventually personally issued an apology about the attack.
The Japanese government continued to claim the attack was an accident. Even so, it reprimanded officers and agreed to compensate the Panay crew. Von Huffman got $1,200, the equivalent back then of a year and a half salary.
I bought a car with the $1,200. Well, $800, I bought a brand new one for $800.
What kind of car?
Chevy Coupe.
Von Huffman continued serving in the Navy until he retired in 1949. The Panay's executive officer, Tex Anders, eventually retired because of his injuries. Members of the crew were heroes, and Nick Sparks says the apology and the money prevented the incident from escalating.
That and the fact that it was Christmas time in the United States and very few people wanted to spend Christmas worrying about whether the United States and Japan were going to go to war over this incident.
But gradually, the Japanese hardline factions gained control. 4 years later, they attacked Pearl Harbor. Today, the 1937 warning is all but forgotten.
The Panay survivors will never forget those hectic, horrible hours when American blood was shed by war-crazed culprits in an Orient aflame.
Ted Robbins, NPR News.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. You'll also find us online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. 10 minutes before 3 o'clock. The Chorale began as a small ensemble performing music for the holidays back in 1982. 25 years later, the Chorale has grown to include some 60 members. The Chorale will celebrate this landmark with a concert on New Year's Eve, December 31st, at the Virginia Theater in downtown Champaign. The program, Just Folk, begins at 7 p.m. Featured guest, Scottish folk singer Jean Redpath. Joining me to offer us a preview of Just Folk and talk about the Chorale is Julie Beiler. She's the Chorale's conductor and founding music director. She is a teacher, singer, and choral director, and she's now directed the Chorale in some amazing venues in Italy and Scotland. And in June of 2008, the group will make its third international tour. Julie, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Congratulations. 25 years.
Thanks again. Yes. I told you just a bit earlier, if you'd asked me 25 years ago if I'd still be here doing this, I would have said absolutely not.
Yeah. Today you've got 60 members. You've traveled with the Chorale to Europe to perform twice. Now, where are you headed in the summer of 08?
Well, it's strange the way this happened. The Ireland tour came about because our bus driver on the Scotland tour was Irish, and he kept saying after every concert, you really must come to Ireland, you must come to. So that's how we got the idea to go to Ireland, and we'll be singing in Galway and at Kylemore Abbey and Killarney and Kilkenny and Dublin at St. Pat's Cathedral and all those unimaginably wonderful places.
You think you'll have the same bus driver?
We absolutely will have the same
Excellent.
Bus driver. It was a requirement. The singer's, his name is Christopher Robin Fox, if you can believe. And so the singer said, yes, we'll come if you'll be the tour director. So he will be with us.
Okay. Meanwhile, December 31st, Just Folk. What's on the program?
Well, that's who we are, you know, Just Folk. Not only members of the Chorale, but everyone on the stage. And we're all connected in some way. As you mentioned, Jean Redpath will be here. She's been with us before. She's kind of aligned herself with the Chorale and comes back to listen to us even when she's not performing. But she will be on stage. And she's bringing with her, in a sense, two musicians with whom she has worked before, Jacqueline Schwab, pianist, and Reinmar Seidler, cellist. Those two folks, if you look at the credits carefully on The War, the Ken Burns series, were both featured on the soundtrack of that series. And so we're excited to have all three of them on stage with us at the Virginia.
Okay. Now, as one of the ways you're celebrating 25 years, you've produced a recording, The Chorale, Silver and Gold, and you brought it with us, with you, to share with us.
Yes, all of that.
So, and I think you brought it with us because there's something we might sample from this that might give us an idea of the upcoming concert.
You surely could hear a bit of folk. We sang it in Scotland, and we'll sing it again in Ireland. This is a little clip of Nellie Bly.
Nellie Bly.
Bly, the chorale there. You guys sound really good.
Thank you.
And now the group has members ranging in age from 15 to 85. I've got the poster for the concert in front of me.
It's true. We have a father and daughter combination. Maybe she's turned 16, so that might be an insult. But at any rate, she came at 15. And yes, I told you a minute ago, I feel like compare it to a kaleidoscope of genders and ages and interests and professions and abilities, and you get it all aligned so that it's perfect when you hear it or listen to it, and then something changes and you have to start all over again. But they're very hard workers, those singers.
Yeah. Now, one of the missions of the chorale today in 2007 is to support music education, and this is something you've been doing now for quite a number of years. Tell us about your efforts there.
Well, they began when 17 years ago we actually made money doing this concert at the Virginia Theater, and so we began to think about what to do with the excess money. We were so used to operating under a small budget. So we contacted Willie Somerville at Urbana High School, is how that began, right in Urbana High School itself, and decided we would give away $1,000 scholarships to high school seniors who were going to pursue music education at the university level. We have been able to do that over the course of the last 17 years. We've supported some 21 or 22 students and stay in touch with those students throughout the course of their undergraduate work. And actually, this year, particularly since it's our 25th anniversary, and we're singing, interestingly enough, at each of our concerts a different arrangement of How Can I Keep From Singing. So we're bringing back a singer winner at each concert. And so also on stage in the Just Folk concert will be Elizabeth Treat, who was one of our winners and is now studying and singing in New York City.
Terrific. Well, I think that coming up this spring or later this winter, we'll have to have you back and we'll talk about the next Young Artist Scholarship, the winner for that, and the concert that goes along with that.
And the return of Dr. Jessup again.
Oh, excellent. From the Mormon Tabernacle Choir.
Yes.
Fabulous. What do these scholarships mean to young artists?
You know, we've had several responses. I mean, they're always grateful, but they say such things as, some people think $1,000 isn't very much money, but it made the difference between me not having to work my first semester and concentrate on my studies. Others say, I could take more private lessons because of this. Others say, it's just good to know that somebody at home knows where I am and knows what I'm doing and is thinking about me.
Yeah, and so, it's a good place to come back to.
It is, and we bring them back, several of them, every year, and give them the idea that we care what they're doing. And, you know, when you go to university, you don't often get the performing opportunities that you have in high school because the pool is bigger. So for them to be able to perform at their home atmosphere is really good. It's a very rewarding program.
Yeah. Julie, thank you so much.
Thanks, Celeste.
Julie Byler is the conductor and founding music director of the Chorale. The Chorale is celebrating its 25 years with a concert, Just Folk, December 31st at 7 p.m. at the Virginia Theater in downtown Champaign. 7 p.m., December 31st at the Virginia.